everyone. Welcome to the She Runs Trails podcast. I am your host, Elements of Daisy. Today we have episode 13. I can't believe it. It's already been 12 weeks that I've been doing these IG live interviews. I really have been enjoying them. So thank you so much for your support. Thank you for those that are joining us today live. And thank you for those that are listening to the podcast later on. I really appreciate you taking the time and listening to these amazing stories. Today's guest, we have Alicia, also known as Leisha24 on Instagram. She is Alicia is an ultra runner. She recently ran her first official 100 miler, Badger, last month, and she got second place. Last year, she ran Moab 240, which is a 240 mile race, and she got third place. Before that, she had ran a handful of ultra marathons. She also attempted the Wonderland FKT, which is close to 93 mile loop around Mount Rainier, somewhere around there. She attempted it. She didn't complete it. However, I think we'll be able to get some good learning lessons from her experience and seeing what she learned from that. And also the reason why, one of the main reasons why I wanted to bring her on today is to talk about how not drinking, becoming sober, how that changed her life, and how she used to run and she used to drink and run, but really when she became sober, and this was back in December 2015, she decided to start taking running seriously, and then she ran Boston Marathon and she started picking up ultra running. So today we're going to learn more about her journey and figuring out what was that transition like, and how did becoming sober change her life. So without further ado, let's bring her on. Hey Disco, thank you so much for let's see if we can.
Hello.
Hi Leisha.
Okay, I'm just turning up my microphone so I can hear you better.
Can you hear me now?
I can. Yep. Yeah, you're okay. Good. I had turned
it up. Am I blurry? Okay, good. Because I was trying to figure out the internet connection. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited and looking forward to talking to you today. So tell us, how did you get into ultra running? How did the ultra running start?
So the ultra running, that kind of started, I guess. It's kind of like little baby steps. You know, I'd always been running. Like since I started, when I was 19, I started running. That was kind of road races and stuff. And then I just decided, I was like, I want to try this trail race. And it was called the Deception Pass Half Marathon. And it's in Washington State. It goes over, it's on Whidbey Island. So you get to run over this bridge called Deception Pass. And it's really cool. And I trained for that. What I thought were like trails, you know, it ended up, you know, it's like a gravel path. It was this trail called the Inner Urban in Bellingham, which is actually part of the Chuckanut 50K, if people are familiar with that. And so it's just flat gravel. And so I got into this race and I'd only done road races before. And all of a sudden we were running on sand. And I was like, whoa, this is so cool. And then we got to this other part where we ran over the bridge and we had to like jump over this barrier to get onto the trails. I was like, what is this? This is even cooler. Like we never do this on road running. And that was my first taste of what actual trail running was. And after I did that, I just joined our local trail running club in Bellingham and started just running trails with them. With no intention of running an ultra. I was like, no, I like marathons. I don't need to do a 50K. I could never run up in the Chuckanuts. And then I just started hanging out with those people and they started talking about all their races and things that they did and got me kind of excited about it. And so I was like, well, you know what? I run a marathon. I'm running on these trails. I think I could do another, 5-6 miles past a marathon to do the 50K. So yeah, I was like, I just was up for the challenge. And it was really, once I joined the community of trail running, that's what really like made me fall in love and want to do an ultra to see what it was like.
Do you feel like the community kind of helped you see what's possible? Because sometimes we have something in our head of like ultra, like, or even like more than 26.2 miles. You're just like, that's crazy. I feel like I'm dying when I cross that marathon finish line. And then you see people doing 50 milers, 100 milers, 200 milers, kind of seeing, you're seeing the people you run with, like, oh my God, you don't have to be an elite runner to do these distances. Do you feel like the community helped your change your perspective and what's
Oh,
possible?
yeah, like 110%. Yeah, because when I first got into trail running, it started with the half marathons, and I signed up for all the, we had this thing called the Bellingham Trail Running Series. And so I signed up for all of the half marathons in the Bellingham Trail Running Series. And then this girl that I was training with a lot, she signed up to do the 50-mile race. And I remember thinking, like, oh my gosh, like, she's crazy. Like, that is crazy. I could never do that. That's nuts. And I remember watching her. So, like, we would finish the half marathon and then we were just all hanging out, like, by the finish line and just watching these 50-milers come in and watching her come in. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, I want that. Like, if she can do it, I think I could do that. And it was kind of like, okay, I did the fifth and I did the 50K. I was like, okay, I could probably do 50 miles. But still at that point, I was like, no, nothing past 50. I don't need to do, never do 100 ever, you know? Still had those thoughts, like, I'm not going to go to that distance. But yeah, just being inspired by everybody around me and that realization that if you put in the work and time and train, like, anybody can really do it. There's The only person holding yourself back is yourself.
Yeah, that's very true. Very, very true. And it's all those thoughts in our heads that kind of tries to convince us otherwise, right? So let's take a step back. So how did running look like for you before you became sober? And then if you guys, you could take us through the journey of your sobriety and kind of we go from there.
I think like I mentioned, I kind of started running around when I was like 19, I believe, 19 or 20. I grew up playing sports, basketball and volleyball, but never ran. I don't know. We always had to do the mile, you know, in middle school and stuff. And I was always really good at that. I was always like the first girl done, but it was not fun. So I just didn't think running was fun because that was running as hard as you could. But yeah, so my dad started running. He ran a half marathon, and I was like, you know what? You know, if he can do it, I think I can do it too. So we started training together, and we ran a half marathon together. That was my first half marathon, and then we kind of decided that we wanted to train for a full marathon and run our first full marathon together. But around age 19 is when I actually first started drinking, and then instead of spending my time training, it was mostly spent like drinking on the weekends. And at that time, it wasn't like super bad, but it was just always like every single weekend was go out, drink, you know, be hungover the next day, drink some more. And I didn't train a lot because I was too hungover to train a lot. So, yeah, what running was, it was something that I did, but I didn't do it very well. I'd sign up for these races, like, to do marathons, but I think my longest actual training run that I did before one of my first marathons was only like, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 miles, but I knew I'd done a half marathon before. So I was like, well, I guess I can do it. So I just kind of stubbornly finished my way through those races. Still putting up like a decent time without much training. My goal was always to, you know, try to break a 4 hour time, but that definitely didn't happen because of the drinking. Yeah, and so it just got to the point where the drinking was affecting everything else in my life negatively. Relationships weren't good, you know, I just didn't feel good, and drinking started becoming like an everyday thing. Whereas every single night, I'm like, okay, pour myself a glass of wine, turn into like 2 glasses, then finish the bottle. Like, I just could never get enough. And then I just got tired of all these bad things happening that were definitely a result of alcohol and drinking. At the time, I was in denial that it was because of the drinking. I had other reasons, like blaming other things, or I was tired, or I was in a fight with this person, and that's why I'm not feeling good. Yeah, it was just one morning. I just woke up and was like, I'm just tired of this feeling, of feeling crappy, of feeling foggy every morning. Like you just have that brain fog that's terrible, and was having like even some like physical withdrawals, having to miss work, just getting in fights, like walking home, doing just really stupid things. I think I'm pretty lucky that nothing like seriously bad ever happened to me. But when I think back to a lot of the things that I did, yeah, I'm pretty lucky that nothing bad ever happened. So, yeah, and really that first morning when I woke up and decided to quit drinking, I just poured out all the alcohol and down the drain. And I was like, well, now what? And I remember writing, I was like, well, I want to have a goal. I need something else to kind of replace this. The alcohol. So I was like, well, I've always wanted to try and qualify for the Boston Marathon. Seems impossible because at the time, I think my best marathon time was like 4 hours and 20 minutes, and I had to get a 3:30 to qualify. So it just seemed, yeah, totally out of reach, but I just needed something to kind of shoot for. So that's kind of when my running really kind of took off, and it started slow, but I just, took it one step at a time, made a plan, and made my long-term goal of trying to qualify. And I told myself, if I never qualify for Boston, that's okay, but at least I'm going to try to do it and see what I can do. Just because I needed that other goal to kind of get to that point. Yeah, so that's kind of the beginning of how I got into running, and how, I guess, yeah, how drinking affected my running, and then after a little bit, yeah.
When you were training for Boston, what were and you weren't drinking, you were ha I'm sure there were some withdrawals of the alcohol. How did you cope with that, with the, instead of Friday night going out with your friends? Because I'm sure your social life changed too, and the group of people you were hanging out with, especially if you have people that are still drinking and they're used to the Alicia that it, hey, party drinking, not the one who's sleeping early to go training early morning the next day. What did you do to adjust your environment and to really like start being able to focus on training for a Boston Marathon and your whole social complex? How did that change and how did you go about it?
Yeah, it like 110% changed, like totally like flip-flopped. I had broken up with my boyfriend at the time, who was also an alcoholic. That was the only thing we had in common. So I wasn't with him anymore. And really, all my friends at the time, they weren't like real friends. They were just drinking friends. So I just kind of stopped responding to them or just saying, hey, I'm not going out. And then I joined some online recovery groups. So that was just super helpful because I had a community at first. There was a website called, what's it, Sober Recovery, and they have forums that you could join. And so I joined that and like instantly kind of connected with this one other person who was also a marathoner. And so we would just email back and forth. So when I was feeling that FOMO of, especially, oh, Friday nights, those are the worst. It's like, oh my gosh, all my friends, they're out drinking, out partying, and here I am at home, like doing nothing. But so I would just send him an email, just write how I was feeling, and we just communicated that way. So that was just really helpful, having that other person to talk to who's also going through it at the same time, because he had just also become sober in that same month as me. So we were going through like the same emotions at the same time. I thought about going to AA, but that just, it honestly just didn't work out with my schedule. And I went to one AA meeting like maybe a year after I'd been sober, but that wasn't the right fit for me. But online groups were huge. Listening to podcasts, that's actually how I first found out about podcasts, was, I realized I'm like, oh, there are these things called podcasts. I need to figure out, like, learn about what these things are. So I just went on like Apple and typed in like recovery, and this one called Recovery Elevator came up. And they do kind of similar things like you do, but with people telling their stories about recovery. And I would go out for my runs and listen to those, and just feel instantly connected to those people and be like, oh my gosh, like I am not alone. I have this, there's all these other people that are going through the same thing as me. So yeah, I just started running more when I wanted to drink, and slowly those drinking friends kind of stopped asking to hang out because I kept saying no. And then as I was running more, I just started joining these relay teams for like Ragnar and Hood to Coast. They have relays, running relays that you can do. And somebody posted on a Facebook running group that they needed a runner. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. I don't know these people. I've always been like pretty shy. And so I was really nervous just joining a group of random people. But I think it was the best thing for me to kind of push myself out of that comfort zone and just meet other runners. And like I'd call, more serious runners, because the serious runners, yeah, a lot of them will drink, but they'll have like one drink. They're not alcoholic drinking. So it was easy to be around them, and they were just good, healthy people to have in my life. So I had this community of like my online recovery groups that I was a part of. And then I also had this in-person group of just healthy individuals through running. And yeah, just kind of it started small and just slowly built and built and became this bigger community. So I think that's kind of key with anything that you're starting out with is you're not, yeah, we all want things instant these days, but if you want something to be great, it's like just start this one, do the next right thing, one thing small at a time. And yeah, it'll usually grow.
I feel like anytime when we want to go through change, sometimes we feel like, oh my God, I'm gonna do this alone. And sometimes that kind of becomes a barrier why even trying to attempt this change. But once you put yourself out there, you realize like, oh my God, there's like just how you were had that community at that point in your life, you can find another community, a different topic sort of thing. You're like, oh, there's other crazy people like me, or there's someone else that wants to do 100, 200 miles. And it's just, I mean, or just quit drinking in this case, like you find whatever you want. If you like Pokemons, you can go find a community that loves Pokemons.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. That's what I learned about podcasts. I was like, there's a podcast for anything. Like the as much as people complain about online things, there's so much good that comes from these online groups and connections. If you just search for it. So sometimes you just gotta be a little proactive and just go out looking and get a little bit outside of your comfort zone and do something that's a little bit scary. Every time I do something that's new or scary, like I still get that like pit in my stomach, a little bit anxiety. But I'm like, I always tell myself, this is good. This means change is happening, or this is a good feeling to have because you're gonna grow from this experience. And I told myself, you know what, if I fail, that's okay. If I'm awkward, that's okay. If I say something wrong, that's okay. I think that was a big part of everything was fear of failure stopped me from doing things. And once I just totally like tried to like, I'm not scared of that anymore. It could happen. That's fine. That was just so freeing.
There's a question here from Disco Loco. Boston Marathon is such an accomplishment. Congratulations.
Oh,
How
thank
did you
you.
break that 330 barrier? Speed work, strength training, nutrition. So yeah, how did you do it? You did it.
Yeah,
One hour
yeah.
ago.
I started small again when I first started running. It was really hard to just, I couldn't even run like 3 miles at that time without having to stop, and it was really frustrating. But, and also I was overweight at the time. I just gained a lot of weight from drinking and not being healthy, and that was really frustrating too. I remember like running past mirrors and just like looking at myself and be like, oh, like this is not who I feel like I am on side. So it was that part of it. But what did I do actually? I just started with a very basic training plan, probably one that I found on the internet. I used to follow like the Hal Higdon ones that were free on there. And then once my times like started to get a little bit faster, I was like, oh, maybe I can actually like try and qualify this year, the year that I got sober. So I was going to try and qualify in 2016. And that's when I purchased a training plan that was, somebody customized it for me. I didn't go through an actual, like having a personal coach, but I kind of told them about myself and they made me like a 16-week training plan. So yeah, there was speed work in there, the long run, some recovery runs. At the time, I wasn't doing any strength training. I was just running, and I don't know that I guess I had a lot of more potential in me than I thought. I mean, if I could run a 420 marathon, without any training, it was pretty amazing to see, like, oh man, when you actually like do the work consistently, it makes a big difference. So that's what I did. Yeah.
When did you have that aha moment of like, oh my God, like I can actually be pretty good at this sport, at this running thing?
I think actually it was on like some of those first few training runs when I realized like on a long run that I was doing at probably maybe 30 seconds slower than my goal marathon pace. I was like, whoa, like if I can run 20 miles at this pace, kind of easy, I think I could like qualify. Like, oh, I guess I am kind of good at this. I don't know. I remember having runs where I'd just like be crying because I'd be like, oh my God, I'm gonna do it. Also, I'm sober and I have all these new emotions going through me too. So it was a lot all at once. But I'd say it actually probably happened more in like the training, a lot of the training runs.
What advice or suggestion will you give someone who currently is in a position where they have this big, ambitious goal, but they feel like today at this moment they can't achieve it, but they see themselves achieving this goal, but they're intimidated by that goal, but they want to, like something deep inside of you is telling you like you should go after this, but consciously you're like, oh, that's too much out of your reach. Like, what will you tell that person to, how to overcome that?
Yeah, what I did, I have a mirror and I have those window pens and I wrote Boston like on that mirror. And I actually wrote that even way before I quit drinking, like thinking maybe this will be a long-term goal. And then it kind of like just was in the wayside. And then as I quit drinking, I was like, I'm really going to go for that goal. So I think putting it somewhere where you can see it every day and put in your head that that is, this is my long-term goal here. It might not happen this year. It might not happen next year. It might not happen in 5 years or, but this is what I'm going to work towards. And then just breaking it down into smaller chunks. I actually wrote in my journal that first day when I got sober saying, this is my goal to qualify for Boston, and this is how I'm going to do it. I am going to, train. I'm going to try and run a half marathon at this pace. And if I can do that, then I'll go for this bigger goal. So, just breaking it into manageable chunks, I think, is very smart. As with any big goal that you go for, it doesn't have to be running related. Any big goal in your life that you want, like I don't know, if you want to buy a house and that seems too big, how are you just break it down into very small pieces, and where you can like, every week or month you can like check things off the box and be like, okay, what am I doing to work towards my goal? And for training for Boston, it's like just get outside and just go for your run. Do it. It might not be a great run, but it's going to be better than not running.
Yeah, great advice. Great advice. Sometimes we forget to break it down, and we think so much about the big goal, but we don't realize how attainable it is once you start breaking it down and the progress. You want to see progress. That's how we stay motivated for our goals. So you've done, which is actually amazing. I saw that you ran 240 miles. You did Moab 240 before running an official 100 miler. Yeah, so my question to you is like, why do you run ultras? Like, what there has to be to going for these 100 plus mile run. Like, what's your passion or reason for running ultras?
I think it just comes from when you run that far, You get to experience all those highs and those lows that like you get in life. And it kind of remind me a lot of sobriety. You know, when you have those days in sobriety where it was just a really crappy day, you're depressed, you're like, it's not fair, it's not fair. Why can't I have a drink? I want to do this. And then all you do is like, well, just one foot in front of the other. You get through that, you make it through the next day. So an ultra is very much like that, where I remember I had my very first like really low where I was running Squamish 50-50, which is a 50-mile race one day and the 50K race the next day. And I was in the 50K race the next day. And it was the longest I'd ever done like back to back at that point in my running career. And I had this lower, I was in the woods and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm never gonna make it. This is terrible. I have so far to go. I've already run this part of the course yesterday because I did part of it on the 50 miler. I still have to go up this huge hill. And I was like, well, yeah, I don't have any other option except to just keep moving. And I just kept moving, put one foot in front of the other, made it to the top, and then like got to go down, got rewarded with a beautiful view. And so that's why I do it. It's for those moments. That view at the top that, you know, you might see it for only 30 seconds, or you get to the view and it's a foggy day and you don't even get to see anything. But it's those kind of moments that just make it all worth it because of all the hard work that you put in that goes to it. So that's the biggest reason why I run ultras.
So you enjoy the low, like you look forward to those low moments because you're ready to, you want to see what comes after the, like, you know, before you go up, you got to go down first, right?
I guess, yeah, I don't know. I enjoy the suffering in the moment. I hate it. I'm like, why am I doing this? Why did I sign up for this? This is stupid. And then once you get over it, you have that moment of like, oh yeah, this is great. I love this. This is awesome. It just, I don't know, makes me feel, empowers me, makes me feel stronger too.
That's I always found that funny how like I'm quitting. This is the last run I'll do. I'm quitting. I'm retiring from ultra running. And next thing you know, you sign up for your next race. So I want to talk a little bit about the Wonderland Trail. Last year, you were going after the FKT. So tell us a little bit what the Wonderland Trail is and why you decided to attempt the FKT. And we'll go from there.
So the Wonderland Trail is a if you look it up on the internet, it'll say it's a 93-mile loop that goes around Mount Rainier in Washington State. Most people that run that do the trail, it comes out on their GPS about like, I don't know, 82, 87. But that's just, I don't know, a little bit off. And so what during the year of COVID, like 2020, that was like the year of FKTs, the fastest known times where people got on trails and try to do a certain section of trail as the fastest anybody else has. So there's a lot of FKTs on that route. There was a new woman's time put up for the supported time, Caitlin Gervin. She did it super fast, and there's like a lot of media attention around that. And then like two guys, oh, I forget. I think Dylan Bowman was one of them. I can't remember who the other guy was that like they did them like almost back to back. I think like Dylan Bowman got it, and then this other guy came out and like beat his time, you know, afterwards. So it kind of got me excited about like, oh, this cool trail's in my backyard. And I was looking up the FKT times. I was like, well, I don't think I could ever beat Caitlin Gervin's time. She's really fast. But there's also in so you can do it two ways. You can do it supported, meaning you have a crew with you, you can have pacers with you, people can meet you and give you food and refuel, or you can do it unsupported. And I was like, well, you know, I like these adventures by myself. I think it might be a good, fun challenge. And I think I could do it by myself unsupported. So I don't know, it was kind of scary to me. And I think I was just looking for that next thing, that next unknown of like, well, I don't know, can I do this? Maybe I can. So that's kind of why I decided to go for it. I went out and did some recon like the week, couple weeks before, maybe like 3 weeks before, and did the trail in 3 days. That's a very popular thing that people will do is you can like do three sections of it, maybe about like 30-mile days each, and you don't have to worry about getting permits, backcountry permits, because you can camp at the front country sites. if you want to get backcountry permits, it's like this whole lottery system because it's a very popular trail. So yeah, I went and scouted it to see if I thought it'd be possible. And it was so beautiful. I had such a great experience. I was like, yeah, definitely want to go back and go for that unsupported FKT time. So yeah, I went and tried to do it, didn't get it, but it was still a very good experience. And I love that trail still.
So I heard on one of the interviews about the FKT. So I guess one of the reasons was mentally you checked out, right? Like you checked out mentally, physically you felt fine, but just mentally, just you knew what was ahead. You made the calculations. You kind of what do you feel could have helped you now having Moab and another 100-miler experience? What do you think could have helped you if you decide to go back and attempt it again to help mentally kind of help you a little bit more on the mental piece?
So I think the biggest thing was, like I said, I mentally just wasn't in it anymore. That had been a really busy summer for me, and I was working 5 days a week, doing physical therapy, and I didn't have any more vacation days to use because I was saving them all up for Moab, and I was trying to do it like I left work Friday at 2 and drove down, and then woke up the next morning Saturday and was going to do the whole FKT and then finish Sunday morning at 6 and go back to work Monday. And I'd kind of been having these big weekend adventures every single weekend in the summer where I'd work all day all week, finish Friday, leave, go somewhere, come back Sunday, then go to work. And so I think that fatigue was also part of it, was that I was just mentally just exhausted. I just tried to ask too much of my body. So I do want to go for it again, and I would love to do it this summer, but I still, like, I have a lot of other fun summer adventures I want to do. So I have to talk to my coach first and see what she thinks. See if she thinks I'm overdoing it again this summer, because I do have other races I want to do and just some fun backpacking trips. In the summertime, like, the window's so short up here to be in the mountains in the Pacific Northwest. It's like we get like maybe 3 months of time where you can go play an adventure in the mountains, and I try to maximize that time, and I just don't want to burn myself out. So I think if I go for it again, I'm definitely going to give myself like a day off before I do it and not try and like go to work, then go down there and do the trail and then go back to work. I'm gonna let myself like relax and not be like stressed before, because I think that was honestly the biggest thing, and I was just tired. One of my friends had asked me, like, right was on his top of like right before you get to White River, like Sunrise area, this really beautiful picturesque place where a lot of people love to go day hiking. And I had one of those Garmin inReach minis so my friends could message me, because there's no cell phone service. And people were following me, because you have to, if you're going to do the Wonderland Trail, you have to tell people how you're doing it. So I told a lot of people. And my friend messaged me, like, you're doing great. Like, just remember your why. And I was on top of the mountain, and I remember being like, I don't even know my why right now. I don't know why I'm up here. I'm so tired. I'm going to have to go back to work like almost tomorrow. I just wasn't in it anymore. And I think if I could have pushed and finished and done it, but I just didn't want to anymore at that point. And that was hard. But ultimately, I think it was the right decision, and I'm excited to go back and do it eventually. If not this year, like definitely next year or sometime, I'll go for it again. But yeah, hoping this year.
What advice do you give someone who's interested in running the whole, maybe not doing an FKT, but more, they're just, I went back there. I did from White River back to Longmire. It was like 30 miles.
Longmire, yeah.
Yeah, like a 30 miles there. I was trying to do the whole thing, but I underestimated the trail and did not plan accordingly. But what advice will you give for someone who wants to go and run the Wonderland Trail, maybe do it 30 hours or something like that? What kind of training will you recommend for the Wonderland Trail?
I mean, so that trail, it's, I describe it as you go up to the top of the mount a peak, and then you go down, and then you cross a river, and then you go up, and then you go down, and then you cross a river, then you go up and down and cross, like over and over and over and over and over. So I would say a lot you want to work on getting a decent amount of vert in, and like get some good hiking legs. You don't need to like run everything, because hiking muscles are different than the running muscles. So actually practicing some hiking in your runs. And if you're going to do it, decide if you're going to do it solo or if you're going to do it with friends. So if you're going to do it solo, the logistics are a little bit harder to, I guess, to figure out, but you could do it because you can run from like lodge to lodge and kind of and stay at those places. But yeah, figure out your nutrition, I guess, what you like to eat, have lots of different options. And just, I guess, be prepared to be in the backcountry too. Make sure you know what you're getting yourself into. You have all the 10 essentials, all the right safety gear. I was very happy that I had my Garmin inReach Mini, because when I did decide to quit, I was, because my boyfriend was waiting for me at the where I started, because he wasn't allowed to crew for me. So I was like, you just have to stay here. You can't help me. Just wait for me to come back. But I was able to send him a message to the Garmin and say, hey, like, can you come pick me up here? And then gave him a data point of where I was at. And then I basically had to wait there for a couple hours for him, but I had packed my little emergency bivy sack. So it's like a little emergency blanket sleeping bag, basically. And they're pretty small. They're like maybe like this big. They don't take up a lot of space. So, and I had extra clothes in my pack too. So I was able to change my clothes, got my sweaty clothes, hop in that sack, and just lay on the side of the road until my boyfriend came and picked me up. So I guess that was one good thing that came out of it. I got to practice using my emergency gear. I've never used it before, so that was kind of nice. So yeah, practice hiking, look over all logistics. There's a ton of reports of people that people have written on the internet of how to do it and how to make it happen, how to hike it or run it in 3 days, their advice. You want to check like some of the river crossings too, because sometimes there's bridges in, sometimes there's bridges out. So you can like check and make sure the bridge is there, or if it's not there, make sure you know how to cross a river safely. Because certain times of the day, the river can be running faster. I remember crossing some bridges and just hearing the boulders like rolling, tumbling through. That's how powerful the water is. And like, yeah, definitely not going to try and cross that if there's not a bridge there. So just being smart that way, and just knowing what you're getting yourself into.
So after the Wonderland Trail, you decided you had plans to do Moab, and I'm pretty, there was, what did training look like, or what does training look like to for a 200 miler versus a 100 miler? Was it similar? Is it different? Like, but take us through that process for anyone who's interested in running a 200 miler.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it definitely, it's kind of similar, I would say. The only thing with the 200 miler that I found that helped me the most, so if you want to run a 200 miler, I definitely suggest going out on some long backpacking days. That helped me. That was the best training I could have done for my brain, for my feet. I went out with one of my girlfriends, and we backpacked with our like 40-pound packs, and we did like 2 30-mile days, and then we did 1 20-mile day after that. And that was my first time ever backpacking. So
Wow.
luckily, yeah, I know, right? Like, here's my first time backpacking. We're gonna hike really far. But my feet had never hurt that bad ever.
Hello?
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Alicia, I
Yeah.
think. Oh, there, you're back. Okay.
Oh,
I think
okay.
I'm not sure if it
I
was me. Okay. See,
don't. Okay.
the last thing I heard was you never backpacked that long.
Yeah. So I never backpacked. Well, I never backpacked before, but yeah, so that was the longest one. But it helped to learn what my feet would feel like when they're tired, because in a 200-mile race, you're gonna get to the point where your feet just, it just, they just hurt and you don't want to keep going. So I learned how to use my brain to kind of overcome like telling myself that my feet hurt, Because if you're sitting there constantly, like, my feet hurt, my feet hurt, my feet hurt, I start telling myself, my feet don't hurt, my feet don't hurt, they don't hurt, I'm okay. Start thinking about other things, and then they stop hurting. So I felt like that was definitely a win, like learning how to use your, like, harness your mental power. So yeah, backpacking, very helpful. And just going out on, like, long adventures. Some fast packing is good to do. Overnight things, practicing running at night, practicing running at night by yourself. And if you're scared to run at night by yourself, go on a route that you're very familiar with, have your car there, tell people where you're going. You might be a little nervous, but if you're somewhere where you normally run, it'll feel a little bit better. And then you'll just get more confidence running at night as you just kind of keep doing it more. But yeah, everybody's 200-mile training is so different, and it kind of depends on what you like to do. But yeah, biggest thing is just spending time out on the trails in the woods and putting in hours on your feet,
Do
is really
you
the
focus
biggest
your
thing.
training more miles a week or time on your feet or a little bit of both?
I would say generally it's time on feet, and then there are some weekends where it's like, okay, I want to get this many miles in. I do have a coach that tells me what to do, which is great. My coach is Corinne Malcolm, and she's awesome. I've been with her for like 3 years now. So I love that I can just open up my training plan and she just tells me exactly what to do. But it really is time-based, where it's like, okay, go out for a 5-hour adventure and try to get like 4,000, 5,000 feet of elevation gain on this route and have fun. Sometimes there are ones where it's like, okay, I want you to go out and do like back-to-back 25-mile days. So you get like 50 miles in 2 days, but you don't like have to go out and do 50 miles on one day because that's a lot of stress on your body. Yeah, so I like the time over mileage. But again, it all kind of depends on what your life is like too, like how much time you have to dedicate to this training. But I would say anybody that wants to train for a 200, even a 100, you have to be able to at least dedicate like at least 9 hours a week to training for like a 8 to 9 week period. So just be prepared that there's going to be this block of training where, okay, we need to get the volume in. So you have to dedicate at least 9 hours to it because I don't think you can't prepare adequately if you don't dedicate enough time to training.
And how many miles a week do you usually when you're doing something like for a 200 and 100 miler?
I would say honestly, I average it was maybe 60, 70 miles a week was average. And then, like, at kind of the peak of my training, I think I had maybe 1 week over 100 miles and a couple weeks at 90. So it wasn't like it was anything totally crazy. And I think that's what. And some people like the high mileage and they can do that and that works for them. But I didn't need to do that many miles and I don't think people need to either. So again, there's not one answer, you know, it depends on what every person can handle, what your body handles. I think the biggest thing for these 200s is you have to have like a why. Like, why are you doing this? Because it's going to get hard and you're not going to want to keep going. So if you don't have a reason why you're doing it, that's deeper than just I want a belt buckle. I feel you just got to have that. You got to have a reason. Or maybe, you know what? I do have a friend who loves belt buckles and she would do it for just the belt buckle. So if you're, as long as your why is like concrete and like you really want it, it works. But you got to have a reason.
Like you don't have, you can't kind of want it. You have to like really want it, right?
Exactly.
So you're a physical therapist assistant and you work full time, correct? Like most or
Doing physical therapy, I actually went down to 4 days a week now because I'm also coaching,
okay.
with doing running coaching. So, but I'd say, yeah, I'm full time working.
Yeah, you're working, you're balancing two jobs and then you're balancing two full-time jobs. How do you fit training since running is not your full-time job? How do you fit training into your schedule with balancing real life and two jobs in the in your case. How do you do it managing, hitting 70 miles a week is a lot of miles, and the time on your feet, and like how what has helped you make it work?
Just I love routine and just being diligent and I think disciplined in my routine, but also allowing for like giving myself grace. If there's a day where I have a family thing and there's just no way I can fit in a run, I will go do my family thing instead because I really value family time and you have to balance it all. And sometimes one thing has to go, it's a scale. So just having balance, and yes, you need to be disciplined with routine, but there is room to change things around. And I think that's where it's been super helpful for me having a coach when I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I can get this long run because I have this going on. I can message her and she's like, okay, well, that's fine. Miss that. We'll just do this week instead, or we'll just totally miss that. So just being able to adapt and be flexible with things. I do like have a strict like bedtime routine. I usually go to bed like right at 8 o'clock. I mean, like, so like right about almost now, like is usually when I'm like getting ready for bed. And I just have a sleep hygiene routine that I do. I listen to my meditation, I put on eye mask, and I make sure I get 8 hours of sleep. Because when you're training this hard, you need to recover hard so you can do the training. And if you're not getting adequate sleep, you're just not going to feel good. You're going to be tired. Your body might break down. You might have more injuries if you're not getting enough recovery time. And then I do my runs. I'll fit my runs and I'll get up super early if I have to get my run in, or do it later. So it's just, yeah, all about fitting it in when you can. Sometimes at work, I will have gaps in my schedule where I'll have patients in the morning and patients in the afternoon, and there's like a gap where there's no patients. And then I'll just go run in the middle of that. And I'm like, great, I got my run in. Now I can go home and do some other things or just hang out with my boyfriend. So it's just all about balance and adaptability.
Does your boyfriend run?
He does actually. I mean, we met running. We met through a Ragnar race. We were both like in the same band together. But he does not run crazy distances like I do. Like he will go out, be like, I'm going for a run, and he'll come back after like 2 miles. So he likes to run like short and fast. But we don't really run together anymore. We used to until I started running further and further. And then he's like, nope, I don't want to run that
And
far.
how do you balance that? How do you balance training in the weekends, doing your weekend adventure runs, but then like hanging out, want to hang out with your boyfriend as well?
Yeah. Again, it's thankfully both of us, we both enjoy like our alone time and we need that. So he gets his alone time when I'm running, I get my alone time. And then we come back and like we have our nighttime routine where like I love Jeopardy. So we watch Jeopardy every single night together. And we just have our little routines of things we do. And then in the summer we do some backpacking trips where we'll go, me and my girlfriend, she also likes to run super far distances. We'll go backpacking together and her husband, my boyfriend will come who they don't like to run that far. So we'll go backpack, we'll like set up our camp, and then we'll go out for a run, like a long run, and they'll just get to stay at the camp and like hang out and not run and be happy. So that's how we like make it work. And I mean, when I did the Wonderland Trail, when I did it in 3 days, I did a 30-mile section. He drove to like Mowich where I was meeting him. We were gonna sleep for the night. So he drove there. He got to do some of his own like day hiking. And then I got there. We got to spend the night together. You can make it work if you kind of do things like that. And he is outdoorsy, but he doesn't like to run as far. So again, it's just I'm very much a scheduler and a planner, and I make sure we plan these times and these things. And sometimes I tell people no that I can't hang out and do things, and that's okay because I need a night just at home with my boyfriend instead.
So it's kind of setting those boundaries with other people and prioritizing what's important for you.
Exactly.
So I know we're getting close to the end of our hour. I have like millions of questions for you. I can't believe it's already been an
Yeah, no
hour.
problem.
But you're a coach, so I want to know why did you decide to become a coach?
Well, actually I coached like my family, like my cousins wanted plans, so I started making them plans. a girlfriend of mine wanted to do an ultra marathon. And so I was like, yeah, I'll coach you just for free. Because I was like, yeah, I love this is fun. Let me coach you. So I started coaching her for a long time. And then she wanted to pay me. And I was like, okay, but I feel awkward with you like just giving me money. So I decided I'd heard of this coaching platform called Team Run Run. I had actually some local runners, friends of mine that were coaches with it. So I looked into it and I joined that because that way she could pay through that and it was a little bit more official. And I thought, like, oh, I'm just gonna, she's gonna be my only athlete. But then I started having other people sign up and I was like, well, this is cool because I just get to talk about running with you and create your plans, which I love to do anyways, and you're gonna pay me to do that. Like, this is awesome. And it just kind of blended into this thing that worked really well with doing physical therapy because I worked with a lot of runners in the clinic. So I could help people, you know, with their training plans and also help rehab injuries or help prevent injuries from coming up if they're feeling things. And then sometimes if, you know, injuries get to be too much, I, you know a lot of people, or I can contact the right people and say, hey, this is a good person. This is where I think you should go. Like, this is so significant. I think you should go get an opinion from this person. So yeah, it just kind of blossomed into this thing that I was able to actually, like, I was like, oh, I have to like take a day off doing physical therapy that I can focus just on coaching now. So it's just become like a little bit bigger than I thought it was. But I'm loving it. And it's just, it's so much fun. And it's fun to help people reach their goals. Actually, just had one of my runners who I worked with last year to qualify for the Boston Marathon. She qualified, actually got to be there at the qualifying race that she qualified for. And she just ran the Boston Marathon just on Monday. So that was just so cool to get to watch her like get her goal, you know, that she didn't think was possible. So I get to live vicariously through my runners too, and all their joy that they get in running, like I get as well. So that's kind of selfish, but I love it.
That's awesome. And if anyone's interested in your coaching, how can they learn more about your coaching services?
So I guess if you go to my Instagram page, you can always click in the link in my bio and there's a link that says, you know, ultra running or running coaching with Alicia, because I don't just do ultra running. I do really anything from like 5Ks to the 200 mile distance, which is a huge, I guess, spectrum. But I love it all because I started out with roads and so I like coaching it all. But yeah, you can click through that or you can just search, go to teamrunrun.com and you can search my name on there. Team Run Run is just a really cool website that has a bunch of coaches too on it. So you can like toggle through different, like if you have a certain price you want to pay, like if you don't want to pay more than 100, you can toggle that. And they'll bring you all the coaches that charge $100 a month. Or if you want just ultra specific coach or trail running, you can hit all these things to kind of narrow it down from a list of like 93 coaches to maybe like five coaches. And then, yeah, I do like 30 minute consult calls with people. So you don't, you know, if you're not sure if you want to coach with me, you can talk and we can kind of talk about what your goals are and see if think we'd be a good fit. Yeah, so that's where you can find me for coaching.
And you have a workshop coming up.
I do. Yeah, that's gosh, it's in May. I don't remember exactly what date in May, but again, I posted about that on my Instagram page. Gonna be doing a trail running 101 workshop with She Jumps, which is a really cool organization. And yeah, it's just me, all the basics. So if you're scared to like just try trail running, you know, if like 200 miles or 100 miles, 50K sounds crazy. Well, I thought it was crazy at first too, so it makes sense. But it's just gonna be all about how to find trails near you. If you're worried about getting lost, we're gonna talk about like how to navigate on the trails a little bit, trail running shoes, gear. Just all the little the basics of getting into if you're like a little nervous about trail running.
And how do they get information? The link in your bio as well. Just go into the link and they'll be
Yeah.
able to sign up through
Yeah.
there.
So
Then.
yeah, through my link tree in my bio you can find more information about that. And the event is it's donation based, so you don't have to pay for it if you don't have the means, but If you do, you can donate $1, $5, and all that goes to the She Drums organization.
And if you're listening through the podcast, her Instagram is Leisha24, right?
Yes. Yep.
It's like I added right now, like I had to memorize it. Leisha24 on Instagram, or you can go to Elements of Daisy and I'll tag her there on the for this episode of She Runs Trail. So you guys can check her out. So just click the link in her bio. She has her coaching services, she has the workshop coming up, and she also has a few other podcasts. If you want to get go more into her sobriety journey, you can go and link in. There's a lot. She's talked a lot more in depth. I know today we focus more on the ultra running part, but if you guys want to learn more about Alicia, like make sure you guys go to her Instagram and follow her. And what's coming up next? What's coming up next for you?
I'd say, well, the next big race I'm doing is called the Tianhe Country 100-mile race. That's in September. I tried to do that in 2019 as my first 100-mile race, but it got canceled like mid-race, like 100K in because of a lightning storm. So I'm
Wow.
going back. I'm going back to get that finished because it felt like a DNF, but it wasn't. It was just canceled mid-race, and so that was the weirdest thing. So that's my big thing that I got coming up, and hopefully the Wonderland Trail, either July or August. But I've got to talk to my coach first.
When is your 100 miler?
September, so it's a
September.
ways away. Yeah.
Okay, well, best of luck. So my last
Thank you.
question is, what has ultra running taught you?
Oh man. I guess just like perseverance and just, whatever life throws at you, you can get through it one step at a time. Again, that's like sobriety cliche, but it's cliche for a reason because it really is just one step at a time. When you're having a bad day or feels like it can't get better, just focus on that one step, next step, and you can get through it. It's taught me that I can get through a lot harder things than I thought I could.
Well, thank you so much, Alicia. I really, really appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing so much. I know, like, and congratulations on your recent 100
Thank
miler getting second place. That's freaking awesome. Like, it's so awesome. Like,
Oh,
your first
thank
100 miler.
you.
I know you're gonna crush it later on in September. And if you do the FKT Wonderland Trail, I will be following. Hopefully,
Oh,
many of
thank
you will
you.
also be following her along her journey and supporting and cheering her on. Again, make sure you guys check out her Instagram, Leisha24, and you guys click the link in her bio. Thank you, everyone who joined us today. If you join later on in the podcast, you can watch the rest of the interview saved in my Instagram, or you can wait later on. It'll be uploaded, the She Runs Trails podcast, so you can listen to it on your run this weekend. So again, thank you so much, Alicia, for joining me today, and I hope to see you and talk to you more soon.
Yeah, thank you. It was great talking today.
Thank
Talk to
you.
you later.
Bye.
Bye.